This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The Egyptians behind them. We're told, "Vayisu v'nei Yisrael l'seineim v'nei Mitzrayim l'sei achareim v'yiru moed." And b'nei Yisrael lifted up their eyes and saw Mitzrayim traveling behind them, and they were terribly afraid. "Vayitzaku v'nei Yisrael el Hashem," and b'nei Yisrael cried out to Hashem. And on that Rashi said, "Vayitzaku," they cried out. "Tofsu umnus avisom," they practiced the trade of their fathers. Their fathers used to daven, so they davened. That Rashi appears difficult on the surface. Why does Rashi need to tell us such a thing? It seems perfectly natural that people in a state of terrible tzora should turn to prayer. What's unusual about that? Almost as if to say they had to figure out what to do, and since their fathers would have prayed, they also prayed. And that's what we need to look at. How natural is it to daven, to pray? Is that a natural sort of reaction? On the surface, yes. But if one looks at it a little bit more carefully, in fact, there are a lot of difficulties with the mere concept of davening. Firstly, why should it be necessary to pray? The Ribbono Shel Olam is chokeh levavos. The Ribbono Shel Olam can see right deep into the hearts of people. He knows better than any of us what we need. We don't even know what we really need. He knows what we need. What do we have to tell him our needs for? Doesn't he know? And more than that, the Mishneh Chochma comments at the beginning of the Sedra that it very, very seldom in Tanakh does it say Vayadaber, and he spoke, referring to a human being addressing God. Whenever it says Vayadaber, it's Hashem addressing people. But very, very seldom, there are only a few psukim where it refers to Vayadaber when a Novi, a prophet, addresses the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he says, because it's a chutzpah, how can we use the word to speak to God? Who are we to speak to the Ribbono Shel Olam? And those few cases where it is mentioned, each one is an exception. He goes through them. So the first question is, what do we need to communicate with the Ribbono Shel Olam for? He knows better than we do what we need. And the second question is, what right do we have to communicate with the Ribbono Shel Olam? What right do we have to address him? What right do we have to talk to him altogether? There's a beautiful medrash. On the basis of which emerges a whole new attitude towards davening. The medrash asks, "V'lomo osu HaKadosh Baruch Hu lehem kach?" Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam put Yisrael through all this? Okay, Egypt, Mitzrayim, we know it as a result of Avraham Avinu, it goes back a long time. And he kept them there for 210 years of slavery, 400 years altogether. Good, we know why that was all done. But they finally escaped, they're out of Mitzrayim. The Geula has taken place. They've left. Why does he make Paro chase them again at the end of it? They're tired already, they're on their way, they want to go. Why does he bring them face to face with the sea, with Paro behind him? What does the Ribbono Shel Olam want from them? Midrash asks this question, this heart-rending question, what did he want from them? Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam do it? Answer the Midrash, a strange answer. Ela shehoyo HaKadosh Baruch Hu mis'ave litfilosom. The Ribbono Shel Olam was craving for their prayers. He wanted to hear them pray. So to hear them pray, he turned the screws on. That's what he did. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, what can the thing be compared to? A king was traveling on the road, and he's traveling, he hears the voice of a beautiful princess shouting out to him, "Bevakosho mimcho, I plead with you, please, atzileinu miyad alistim, save me from these robbers, save me from these robbers." Turns around and he sees this beautiful princess is calling out to him. Shoma melech v'itzilu, the king hears and he saves her immediately. Lachar yomim, after a few days later, bikesh liso iso leisho. He wanted to take her out on a date and see, possibly they could get married. So he picks her up to take her out to dinner, and he's craving to communicate with her. The lawyer so wrote, so she doesn't talk. She's got nothing to say about anything. Monosyllabic answers to everything he says to him. So the king was getting frustrated. He wanted to hear her express herself again. It was so nice when she was shouting out and he saved her. And he has this memory, this romantic memory at the back of his mind of the intimacy of that moment, this damsel in distress, and he comes and saves her, takes her off. Me'osu ha-melech, what did the king do? Giro ba'alistim, kadei she'titzuk b'ishma ha-melech. He hired a bunch of robbers again. He hired a band of robbers and sent them to get her, so that she should shout again, and then he could save her again. Ba'alistim, the robbers came, itchila tzuekes le'melech, she started shouting out again to the king. Omer lo ha-melech, said to her the king, lekacha yisim yisav, l'shma ha-kelech. That's what I wanted. I wanted to hear you talk. I wanted to hear you express yourself. We went out to dinner the other night, and you didn't say a word. I wanted to hear something. It's the only way I could imagine of getting you to express yourself. Kach Yisrael, kshayu b'mitzrayim, so Israel, when they were in Mitzrayim, hayu meshubodim, meshabdim boyim, and the Egyptians were enslaving them. Hitchilu tzvakim, they shouted and pleaded, v'tzeli yonel na'akadosh baruch hu, and they hung their hopes on the Ribbono shel Olam. Miyad v'yar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, hitchil ha'akadosh baruch hu mitzion, mishom biyad chazoko v'Yisrael netuyo. Immediately the Ribbono shel Olam began to deal with them and to take them out from there with a strong hand and an outstretched arm. And now he's taken them out. What happens now? Silence. No communication. Everything's quiet. The law you wrote to him, they wouldn't communicate with him. May also, what did he do? Giro leparo lido fachareim. He made Paro chase after them. That is the Medrash. And the Medrash, apart from being very beautiful, is very amazing. Because it would appear that the entire episode of Kriyas Yamsuf could have been averted had the Bnei Yisrael communicated with the Ribbono Shel Olam between the time they were taken out of Mitzrayim and the time that they came to the Red Sea. And it was only in the vacuum of communication, in the absence of their crying out, that the Ribbono Shel Olam had to turn the screws on in order to bring that cry that he wanted. In which case, we come to the very strange conclusion that whereas we have always thought that tefillah, prayer, davening, is a means of extracting ourselves from situations of danger, we now learn exactly the opposite. Danger is a means of extracting prayer from us. But prayer is an end in itself. Prayer is not a means to any end. Tefillah, we are not mispalil in order to achieve something. Things happen to us in order that we should be mispalel. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to be communicating. He wants to hear from us. It gives him nachas. It gives him pleasure to hear from us. And when there's not enough communication, the screws are turned on so that we should communicate, so that we should express ourselves. In that case, the prayers of Am Yisrael are like music for the Ribbono Shel Olam's ears. It gives him the pleasure of it's like listening to music. He loves to hear us sing. He loves to hear the sounds. Gentlemen, if you want to come in, I'll stop for a moment and there are plenty of seats. You can come and sit down. There's a very difficult mechilta which begins to make sense. The mechilta also in our sedra Eser Shiros Hein. There are 10 Shiros, 10 songs in the Tanakh. Harishino shenemro b'mitzrayim. The first one that was said in Egypt. Hashniyo, the second one was Al Hayom, was on the sea, the one of this week's Sedra. Hashlishi Salabeir, the third one was concerning the well. Harviyishoma Moshe, the fourth one Moshe said at the end of the Torah. Hachamishis, the fifth one, Sheomar Yoshua, which Yoshua said, Shneemar Azidabe Yoshua Lifne Hashem Bayim Teit Hashem. And if you look in Yoshua to look at that Shiro, look at that song, see a very strange thing. There's no song there at all. As Yidabe Yoshua Hashem, then Yoshua spoke to Hashem. This is one of the exceptional cases which the Meshech Chochma mentions, where the word Yidaber is used from a Novi to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then Yoshua spoke to Hashem, Beyom Teis Hashem Es HaEmori Lifnei Bnei Yisrael, when Hashem gave the Emori over to the Bnei Yisrael. Vayom Eleine Yisrael, and he said in the presence of Yisrael, in the eyes of Yisrael, Shemesh Begivoin Doim Veyoreach Be'emek Ayoloin, O sun, stand still in Givoin, and moon in the valley of Ayoloin. The famous story of Yoshua. That the Mechilta counts as one of the 10 songs. Where's the Shira? What's the song there? So it's true that there's a bit of rhythm in that posuk. It's a poetic posuk. But to call it a Shira, to call it a song, and that's in fact how the Targum translates it. He doesn't say, Oz Yadaba Yoshua. He doesn't say then Yoshua spoke. He says, Bechein Shabach Yoshua Kodom Hashem. This is how Yoshua praised the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we see that the line between prayer and praise is beginning to become extinguished. Yeshua turns around and he wants the Ribbono Shel Olam to stop the sun. A tefillah like that, that needs such power to reverse the powers of nature, let the sun stand still in its tracks. And he turns and he pleads to the Ribbono Shel Olam to do it. That's called Shira, that's called a Shvach, it's called praise. Where from? We begin to understand that all our tefillah is praise. The only thing that gives us the right to address the Ribbono Shel Olam is that he enjoys it. He likes to hear our voices. He likes to hear the sound. And that pleasure which the Ribbono Shel Olam gets from hearing us communicate is what he wants. That's the pleasure of hearing us sing. But we need still to analyze a little bit more clearly what the difference is between tefillah and shiro. There are all sorts of different kinds of shiro. There's mizmor and there's tehillah. And the shir and the shiro, these are all different terms within the broad category of shiro. But this evening we'll only be dealing with the two categories. Tefillah, when we plead to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we want something, when we ask him for something. And shiro, which is song, praise, tishbachos. But we begin to see that the two concepts are very, very closely linked. And in fact, later on the Midrash says that just as Bnei Yisrael developed high standards of Yerushalayim before they sang their song, as it says, "Vayiru ames Moshe ve'aminu ba'Hashem u'Moshe avdei." They feared the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they believed in Moshe and the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then, as Yoshua Moshe and Israel, then they sang. So we too have to purify our minds and our hearts and develop great levels of Yerushalayim before we daven. And that's where we learn from also that the Atfilo, Ashmona Esra, has to come straight after the Brocha of Geula, of Goal Yisrael, the Brocha of Redemption. All these halochas of our tefillahs, these are dinim which we use in davening, we learn from their shira, from their song. Once again we see the ability to move from one to the other, that in concept they are very closely linked. The shira of Bnei Yisrael and the tefillah of Bnei Yisrael. That being the case, that's the Ribbono Shel Olam craves for our tefillah, wants our tefillah, enjoys it, and in fact, a lot of the tzoras that we're subjected to are there in order to elicit tefillah from within us. Then another mechilta becomes very, very difficult. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, and Hashem said to Moshe, Ma titzak eloi, what are you shouting to me for? Dabra ben Yisrael v'Yisrael, talk to ben Yisrael, tell them to move, go into the water, go. What do you mean, what are you shouting at me for? We've just learnt that they followed, the Bnei Yisrael followed the example of their parents and grandparents, and they davened in a time of trouble. And here Moshe is being criticized for davening. So there are two views in the Mechilta. The one is the view of Rabbi Yeshua, who says, Ein lohem li Yisrael ela liso. It's not a time for davening, now it's a time for traveling. They should move. And then there's the view of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Bonai nesunim betzoro. My children are in a state of trouble. Hayom soige, the sea closes in on them. Basine roidev, and an enemy is pursuing them. Ve'ato oimeidu marbe bitfilo. And you are standing and you're taking so long over your davening. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, Moshe Rabbeinu is not being criticized for davening. He's being criticized for the time he's taking over his davening. Rashi brings the Mechilta. Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo es ato laharich b'tfilo. She Yisrael nutinim b'tzorah. This is not a time to take long over your davening. Daven, yes, but make it quick. Get on with it. What's all this? What's the schlepping in the davening? That's in total contradiction. Understand that if the purpose of davening is to tell the Ribbono Shel Olam that we have needs, that's a philosophic difficulty. But then I understand the Ribbono Shel Olam saying, look, I know you have needs, just get a move on. Israel is suffering. What are you davening for? Then I would understand. But if we've come out that that's not the purpose of davening, and on the contrary, the Ribbono Shel Olam puts us in trouble, as the Medrash has just told us, the whole circumstance was created out of the Ribbono Shel Olam's desire to hear the tefillah. Here the tefillah comes from nobody less than Moshe Rabbeinu himself. And Moshe and the Ribbono Shel Olam says, no, get on with it. Finish the tefillah and start moving. Enough tefillah already. What kind of business is this? And on this, Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner works out a very interesting concept. And basically what emerges from his words is the following. If I'm listening to a concert, and it's a very beautiful concert, so at the end of the concert, the audience clap, they want an encore. That's putting the orchestra under pressure. They want to go home already. But the audience insists, and the orchestra decides to give an encore. In the middle of the encore, the audience get up and walk out. That's not nice. We asked for the extra. We asked for the encore. We can't walk out in the middle. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner, the purpose of tzoris is to elicit tefillah. The tzoris aren't going to stop in the middle of the tefillah. That's like walking out in the middle. It's the tzoris which caused the tefillah. So as long as you're davening, the tzoris aren't going to stop. You've got to decide when to stop. The orchestra decides it's enough now, now we're going home. But as long as the orchestra decides to go on, you asked for it. And if you asked for it, it's impolite for you to walk out in the middle. Once you've asked for it, you've got to let them play as long as they want to. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner, the Ribbono Shel Olam, through turning on the screws of trouble and difficulty and pain and suffering, he elicits the tefillah. It would be rude, so to say, for him to turn the screws off when you're in the middle of the davening. And therefore he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, stop davening already. I want to save Bnei Yisrael. And as long as you're davening, I'm not going to stop. You stop davening, then I'll save them. A new concept. That the cause of the tefillah isn't removed for as long as one is in the process of davening. We have to decide when we're stopping. Ribbono Shel Olam, you wanted to hear our sweet voices. You've heard it. It's enough now. We finished davening. Now turn the screws off. It's over. The game's over. And with that, he in fact answers a beautiful, very beautiful answer to a difficulty in the Hallel. We say the Hallel every time, but we don't think what we're saying. Just babble it out. David HaMelech says, "Ohavti, I love it, ki yishma Hashem es koili tachanunoi." That the Ribbono Shel Olam hears the voice of my supplications. What does that mean? He hears and he responds, obviously. And he answers my prayers. I am happy, I love it when the Ribbono Shel Olam answers my prayers. What's the next posuk? Ki hitoz noili. You know why I love it? Because he listened to me. Because he applied his ear. He went through the process of listening. But you already said that. You said, I love it because he's answered my prayers. He's heard my prayers. Ki yishma Hashem es koli tachanono. Means I love it that the Ribbono Shel Olam has heard my prayers, has received them, has reacted and responded to them. In the next passage you say, ki yitoz noili. Should be the other way around. Or havti ki yitoz noili. I love it when the Ribbono Shel Olam applies his ear to my tefillah and he answers them. But not this way around. He answers them and he applies his ear to them. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner, with our new principle we can understand it. Since the purpose of the Tzorah is to elicit the prayer, then what David HaMelech loves is not that the Tzorah is removed. Let's look at it this way. One would normally think a person has Tzorahs, he has trouble, and he prays and the trouble is removed. So normally he would think, but you know what, I would have preferred not having the trouble and not having had to pray. That would have been the best of all. But now that I've got the Tzorahs, I'll be mispalel. But the way we've worked it out, it's not that way. One is far better off having had the trouble and being mispalel, because tefillah is an end in itself. It's not just a way of removing a nuisance. Tefillah, prayer, is an end in itself. And the trouble was only a means to getting to that end. In that case, what is my pleasure? That the Ribbono Shel Olam removes the trouble? No, that shouldn't be my pleasure. I should be grateful that he gave me the Tzorah, because that made me pray. So what does David HaMelech mean when he says, Hashem has received my prayer? So what are you so happy about now? You stop davening. It was the trouble which caused the prayer. Ah, says David HaMelech, if he removed the trouble, ki hita oznali, it means he was listening to my music. It means I had an audience and he enjoyed it. And when he'd had enough, was it? When the concert was over, he turned off the trouble. The reason I'm happy is not that the tzoras was removed. The reason I'm happy is ki hitoz noili. The fact that the tzoras was removed shows me that the Ribbono Shel Olam listened to my music. That's what gives me pleasure. That's how he explains it, and it comes out beautifully. But it turns upside down our whole concept of tefillah. That's tefillah. Tefillah is the music which the Ribbono Shel Olam craves for and wants to hear from us. What is Shira? Shira is the music which he hears from us after the Tzorah is over. There are two types of music. There's music in a major key and there's music in a minor key. The music that the Ribbono Shel Olam hears when the taps are turned on, when the Tzoras is coming, is music in a minor key. It's the Oyvei music. It's very beautiful music, particularly for the Ribbono Shel Olam to hear how we depend on him, how we turn on him, and how we cry to him. But there's another kind of key to music as well. That's the music in the major key. When we come close to death, when we come close to annihilation, and at the last minute there's a salvation, there's a Yeshua, and there's total release from that pressure straight afterwards, then we have Shira, then we have song in the major key, then we have the song of Hashem Yimloich Le'ilon Voed. The Ribbono Shel Olam, we declare in a major key, strong and powerfully, joyously, the Ribbono Shel Olam will rule forever and ever. We see that, we can feel that, we've experienced that. The concept here is one of maintaining of tensions. In any music, in fact throughout life, let's take music as an example, one of the keys to the success of the music, perhaps the biggest key of all, is the maintenance of pressure, the maintenance of tension. The moment the music starts becoming boring, it already loses its value totally. The mind turns off and it's boring, that's the end of it. What mechanism does a composer use in order to ensure the maintenance of tension? So he uses little surprises. You expect the music to go one way, it goes another way. He's got all sorts of mechanisms that he can use. One of the mechanisms that he uses to maintain attention is the alteration and alternation of rhythm and of key. All of a sudden, he'll either change the theme, he'll change the harmony, but that in itself can become monotonous and very difficult. If he's constantly changing the harmony, you don't get a chance to absorb it. So he's got to sometimes be very repetitive with the harmony. Just the same as giving a shir, it's the same as writing a book. If you think you can make a point once and anybody will hear it, you're wrong. People don't concentrate that way, and if they do hear it, they certainly don't absorb it. So you've got to make the point over and over and over and over again. The moment you start making the same point over and over again, you start watching the heads dip and people drop off to sleep one after the other. So what mechanism do you use to be able to repeat a point over and over again and yet maintain the tension? The same harmony is being kept, rhythm can be changed, and key can be changed. That's the simplest mechanism. You can play the same harmony in different keys, and each time you change the key, it jars one alert, it makes one alert. And then after a few moments, you can't tell the difference anymore. You forget that it was ever played in another key. And just as you're beginning to forget that, again in another key it comes. That's the mechanism that he uses. And so it is when one speaks, one changes intonation, one changes tone, one says the same thing in different ways. There are mechanisms that one can use to maintain attention even though the material is being repeated. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants to hear the music. But to create music, there also has to be tension. The composers, the great composers, composed music in times of tremendous personal tension, many of them. How does the Ribbono Shel Olam create that tension? Good, so he turns the taps on. Makes things tight for us. Begins to hurt us. The problem with that is one starts getting used to it. Tension exists only for moments. One can't maintain tension for a long time. You can be tense only for a few moments, and then the tension is dissipated. And all very well, so the Ribbono Shel Olam will turn the taps on, things will become tight, the water starts reaching the mouth, you turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam in prayer and tefillah, but how long can you carry on like that, saying Tehillim? You're standing at the sea with Mitzrayim behind you, so imagine it. Imagine you go and watch a movie portraying Yetzias Mitzrayim, not like they do it in Hollywood, but a real one. And you watch the whole thing, it's all exciting, and the build-up, and the first of the Makkahs, and the second of the Makkahs, and the third of the Makkahs, and the fourth of the Makkahs, and the tenth Makkah, and finally Paro chases them all out, and off they go, and it's wonderful, and the tension is building up, and the pace of the thing is moving up, and they're off on their chariots, and away they go, and they hit the Red Sea, and there's a moment of tension, and there's, you wait, and there's discussion, what's going on, should we cross, how are we going to cross, should we make boats? And they decide, let's sit down and work out, what can we do? All of a sudden you hear in the background the sound of chariots. The sound comes louder and louder and louder, and then you see on the screen in the distance there the Egyptians start appearing. You see the panic among Bnei Yisrael. Now what are we going to do? And the Egyptians are coming closer and closer. And finally the Egyptians encamp themselves only a few meters from the back of the Machane Yisrael, and the sea is in front. And the tension in the cinema, you can imagine. Everybody waits to see what's going to happen. Moshe Rabbeinu calls everybody into the Beis HaMedrash, and they start saying to Tehillim, Mama Kim Koros Icho Hashem, and there's this tension. You see the Egyptians preparing for war, and Yisrael is saying to Tehillim, and it goes on 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour. People will start getting up and walking out. The tension's lost. You can't maintain tension for more than a few moments. So the beautiful music which results from this moment of extreme and excruciating tension which the Ribbono Shel Olam has created, which brings the V'yitzaku Bnei Israel crying out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's all he wants to hear. Now what do? Now you release the tension, and then you get a major chord. The moment you release the tension, there's the major chord. The Ribbono Shel Olam has got it once again. He gets the music again, a different music. He gets the music of Shira, not the music of Tefillah. Still music, but it's the music in a major key and not the music in a minor key. And then, what do you do after that? Needs more tzoros. And so the water's bitter, they've got no water. And then the water becomes sweet. And that is life. Life is a build-up to tension and a release of that tension. And it cycles. The purpose, the Ribbono Shel Olam's desire for communication. There needs to be tension in order to hear the music. And the only way the tension can be created is by cycles. The amazing thing that the human being has is the stupidity constantly to believe that this is the last cycle. Now things are bad, and now they're really bad. Now it's never going to get better. And then it gets better, and comes the major key, comes the Shira, and now it's always going to be good. They forget the tefillah. No more minor keys. Everything's wonderful, and it's never going to get bad again. And then all of a sudden it gets bad, and they're back into minor keys, and they're crying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and things are bad, and it's never going to get good again. That's how we are. When it's night time, we believe that it will never become morning. And when it's morning, we believe it will never become night time again. That's how the human being operates. And they say that nobody books their summer holidays on a rainy day. Why not? The travel agents will tell you. The rainy day, nobody books their summer holidays. Why? It's raining. Yeah, but it's winter now. You're booking for the summer. But the psychology is, if it's raining now, it's going to rain forever. It's always going to rain. There'll never be a summer. Comes the summertime, nobody buys winter clothes in the summer. Why don't people buy winter clothes in the summer? It's warm, it's hot. But it's not going to stay hot. You can offer big discounts. People don't buy it in the summer. It's warm. You don't need winter clothes. They believe it's going to remain that way forever. That's the stupidity of people. The wiser people understand it, and they prepare themselves for it, and they make use of opportunities of these cycles. But we need to go a step further and understand the purpose of it all. What kind of game is this that Ribbono Shel Olam plays with us? The answer is, this is no game at all. This is the Ribbono Shel Olam's method of maintaining the correct tensions with which to elicit tefillah. Because life is like a tide and an ebb. There must be movement, it must be dynamic, and you can't always have movement in one direction. There's got to be up and down, up and down, up and down. It's a pulse. And that pulse of life which one has in one's body and one has in everything that one does, that's the pulse which creates the tension. There's a contraction, there's an expansion. There's a contraction, there's an expansion. It's the economic cycles, it's the health cycles, it's spiritual cycles, it's biorhythms. Call it what you want. That's how the Bria operates. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to feel the pressure and to scream, and to feel the release and to sing, and to feel the pressure again and to scream again, and to feel the release again and to sing. At what point does the relaxation of a muscle begin and the contraction end? It's very difficult to say. The muscle contracts, and then all of a sudden it releases itself. One could almost say that the purpose of the contraction is in order to bring about the release. And certainly in this sense this is so. Geula. What is Geula? Redemption. Redemption is that release. Redemption is having come close to death and being totally redeemed. And being able to express oneself in that song of Shira, which the Ribbono Shel Olam enjoys so much. But it's not just an expression of oneself, it's an elevation of one's entire being. After a moment of Geula, one reaches levels, in this case they reach levels of Nevuah, they reach levels of the greatest prophecy. The tremendous spiritual heights that one can reach after a realization that one has been saved from a terrible predicament. Those moments thereafter are very, very precious and very exalted. That's the feeling of Geula. And really one can say that the Tzora is merely the beginning of the Geula. For there to be a redemption, there needs to be a tightening of the screws. At what point is it suffering and at what point is it the beginning of the redemption? It's impossible to know. One cuts one's skin. Rabbi Yeruchim gives the example. You cut your skin, it hurts. And it hurts for days afterwards. But what is really hurting? The healing process? Or is it the original cut which is causing the pain? Pretty difficult to know. Because within hours after the cut, the healing process is already taking place. Sometimes it's the very healing which is hurting. And we shout, oi, 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 take away the pain. And we don't realize, the doctor says, oh, is it sore? Baruch Hashem, I'm happy. As long as it's sore, that you're healing, it's good. And you can't understand what it's all about. When we find ourselves in situations of pain and suffering, we imagine, oh, this is it, what's happening? What's happening? We're being healed. What's happening? We're being refined. We're being elevated. There's a contraction of the muscles in order that there can be another release. There's a turning on the screws in order that the screws can once again be released, so that that tension can be maintained and that we can develop the Shira. The question poses itself now, a very interesting question. Is it possible to avoid this whole process? Is it possible to maintain tension ourselves? Do we need this constant suffering and release from suffering, suffering and release from suffering? Or is it possible that we can find within ourselves, that the human being has a capacity within himself to find a system of maintaining tensions even during the good times? Because do you realize what a find that would be? There's no greater discovery that one could have than that. If we could discover a means, once we've understood, and if we believe all this Torah, assuming of course we believe in the Torah, if we believe this Torah, that means we now understand the purpose and system of suffering. We now have a method, possibly, if we can research and find a method to alleviate suffering, because we can maintain the tension without the suffering. Maybe there's some other way we can do it. Can we reach levels of geula, levels of redemption, without going through the suffering process? On the surface, no. It doesn't appear possible. How can one do it? That feeling of release, that feeling of relief, that Baruch Hashem, as you come out, only a person who's really gone through it can really know what it means. Most of the time we're not aware of it. A person who's never had a terrible accident, and the glass flying everywhere and the noise, and it takes him a moment and he realizes a moment later that he's untouched, he's okay, he's alive still. That feeling of redemption, Baruch Hashem. Is it possible to have that feeling without having had the accident? Because if we can do that, then we have the key to the greatest, most exalted spiritual heights without having to go through this perpetual suffering. Chazal have a way, believe it or not. And it's a way which you've seen practiced very often with little success. And the reason it's practiced with little success is because people don't understand what they're doing. Have you ever seen people break a glass under a chuppah? Of course you have. What's it all about? What kind of crazy idea is that? I mean, you're waiting. Imagine what do the goyim think? I'd be interested to know. Like, what do they think? Break a glass. What's going on with these Jews? The source of that breaking the glass is a Gemara in Brochus. Mar Brei de Ravina, the son of Ravina, Ovod Hilula Libre, made a wedding for his son, the grandson of Ravina. Chazinu L'Rabbonin Dehave Kabad Chitura. And he noticed the Rabbonin were having too much of a good time. They were laughing, they were enjoying themselves too much, they were joking and laughing, they were lightheaded. To a degree. And he didn't approve of it. Why didn't he approve of it? Fear of loss of tension. Such joyousness, it's going to have to be broken. What happens eventually? It just wears out. And unless the tension can be recreated, that joyousness is going to be lost. Aisi kasa de mukro bas arba mi azuzi betovar komayu. He brought a glass, a container of beautiful glass worth 400 zuz, which in our kind of currency is something like 4,000 rand, the tovar kamayu, and he shattered it in front of them, the atziv, and they became sad. What does he want to make them sad at his son's wedding for? That's the tension that is necessary. There can't be endless happiness. Happiness can only be preserved if it's a pulse, if there's a tide and an ebb. And he didn't want anything worse to happen than that. Let there rather be a glass broken, and let that be the tension creator. And then we can build up the happiness again, and the tension can be maintained. The Gemara goes on. Omru le rabbonu le rav hamnuna. This is a very funny Gemara. Unless one has this understanding of it, it doesn't make any sense. Omru le rabbonu le rav hamnuna zuti. The rabbonu said to rav hamnuna, the younger one, Hilulu de Mar Brei de Ravina, at that same wedding. Must have been a very interesting wedding. Lishri lon Mar, they turned to Rav Hamnuna Zuti and they said, please sing something for us. He must have had a good voice, he was a Baal Menagin. Give us a nigun. So he took the microphone and he gave them a nigun. Omalu said to them, what was his song? He started singing. Vailandamisnin, we're all going to die, we're all going to die. It's the wedding. The chasana. And their answer is even stranger. And they said, one second, stop, Rav Amdun Azuti. Anan my nani basrech, what's the refrain? What must we answer to this peculiar? Never heard this one before. What are we supposed to answer? Omar Lehu said to them, Hey Torah, hey mitzvah, the magnu alone. You must answer, where's the Torah and where's the mitzvahs which will save us? What's he doing here? He's creating the tide and the ebb. He's creating the tension. You can only be happy if you realize how close you are to death. First realize that. When you realize how close you are to death, Hey Torah, hey mitzvah, then you can appreciate Torah and mitzvahs, but I'm not dead, I'm alive. And as long as I'm alive, I can do Torah and mitzvahs, and that can save me from death. I have salvation without having gone through the suffering. By mere consciousness of death, by mere awareness of how close I am to it at every moment, I can build in my own tensions. And that way I can have simcha, that way I can enjoy myself. And here you have the very fundamental principles of Musar. It's often thought that Musar is depressing. And it's right. If you have the song without the refrain, Musar is depressing. The song is Musar. The refrain is Torah. If you learn Musar without your Gemara, you're finished. You're in for a massive depression. If you learn Musar, if you learn Vailan of the Mislin, we're all going to die, we have to give a cheshbon to the Ribbono Shel, it's terrible. One goes into an absolute terrible black depression. That's not the purpose of Musar. The purpose of Musar is to create the tension. That when you've become fully aware of this death, which is one moment away from you, then you're able to say, Hey Torah, Hey Mitzvah, the Magnu Allah. Where's the Torah and Mitzvahs that can save us from all this? And there's this tremendous relief. There's this Geula without having gone through the Tzora. That's why in Bereshis, when it says that the Ribbono Shel looked at the Bria, V'hineh Tov Me'od, and behold, it was very good. The Midrash says that was Mison, it was the Malach HaMoves, it was death. Ribbono Shel was particularly happy with the creation of death, because creation of death allows the human being to maintain a state of happiness, a state of simcha, without having to suffer. Just the knowledge that it's there. It's true that for our whole lifetimes we have to go through with this terrible fear of it coming at the end, but it's that fear which, if utilized correctly day in and day out, enables us to be able to express the joys of Geula. But today I've been saved from death. Wake up in the morning, Moide ani lefonecho, melech chai v'kayom, shechazarto b'nishmosi. To thank the Ribbono Shel, I'm awake, I'm alive. To go around conscious of the dangers that there are in the world. National dangers, international dangers, personal dangers. The bacteria that float around, the illness that floats around. Walk into a hospital and see young people, old people, what they're struck with, Nebuch. How suddenly they're struck with it. And every person who's lying in a hospital will tell you, oh, how we take good health for granted. And there's no way that one can fully understand what a person is saying if one isn't in that position oneself. Of course we take it for granted. The tension is gone. What we really need, Chas v'Sholom, is to get ill several times a day. If we really got, imagine such a situation. One wouldn't know how to live that way, but just imagine on what an exalted plane one would live. After breakfast, you have a heart attack, Chas v'Sholom. And the ambulance is there, and off you are to the hospital. And you're sweating not just from the heart attack, but from the terrible fear. You know what it means. And you're worried, if you organize yourself and your children, is there enough provision for your family? And you're going out of your mind. You get to the hospital, and the doctor takes a look at you and says, you're fine, go home. Gula. Fine, off you go to work. You go to work, you just sit down at your desk, you have a stroke. The ambulance comes to fetch you again, off you go, the same business. Oh, you say Tehillim, everybody says Tehillim for you, Mispalei Ribbono Shel, get me out of this, and I'll never do an Aveira again. As the words are out of your mouth, the card rolls up to the hospital, doctor takes a peek at you, says, well, what's wrong with the man, go home. So it's a chesed of the Ribbono Shel. The Ribbono Shel's kindness is, he says, look here, I'm not going to do that for you. What I am going to do for you is I'm going to tell you there's such a thing as death, number one. Number two, I'm going to show you people dying. You'll see it all the time. You'll go to funerals, levaya. I'll show you people in the process of dying. If you go to hospitals, you'll see people dying. And I'll tell you another thing. You don't know when it's going to hit you. It can be any time between now and the end of your life. Never take it for granted. And it can get you at the most unexpected times. Now, you don't have to run backwards and forwards to hospital. You can use your imagination. If you've got an imagination. And you can maintain that same height of tension, of appreciation of the goodness of good health, and of everything that we've got, the opportunities that we've got, simply by the imagination of Vayelon de Mislin, one day we're going to die. That's the mechanism. It's the mechanism of Musar combined with Torah, of Musar combined with mitzvahs, a reminding, a constant reminder that life is limited, time is running out, and it can get one at any time, together with the knowledge that every moment of life that I've got is eternal. Every moment of life that I've got, I can use to achieve absolute perfection. One more word of Torah, another Tosfos, a piece of Rambam. That's something that can stand me in stead for the rest of eternity. Those are the mitzvahs in the Torah, the Magidan Aleinu. Those are the Torah, the mitzvahs, which are able to save us. And that brings us to a state of Simcha Shel Mitzvah. That brings us to a state of appreciation and joyousness of mitzvah. So far from the Musa turning us into black depressives, the Musa turns us into being so finely attuned that every little thing we see is a source of joy, a source of happiness, and a source of appreciation. And with that, it's possible for us to live constantly on the level of Shira, to live constantly on the level where all our communication to the Ribbono Shel Olam is song. It's all in the major key. Every moment of our lives, we're thanking the Ribbono Shel Olam for what we've got. And as long as we keep singing in the major key, it could be never necessary for the Ribbono Shel Olam to bring the kind of tzoros which we need in order to alter to the minor key. We do that ourselves with remembering Yom HaMisa. Had Bnei Yisrael talked to the Ribbono Shel Olam on their journey from Egypt to the Red Sea, says the Medrash, he wouldn't have had to bring the Mitzrayim after that. And if we're able to continue talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam day in and day out, expressing to him our wondrousness, our feeling of joy at being alive, and being given the opportunities that we are given, it is theoretically possible for us to maintain our levels and to avoid, chas v'sholem, any unnecessary tzoros and suffering.